We have more Inside Wealth and Out right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW San Francisco. We're back with Steve McClellan, former analyst at Merrill Lynch, 19-time All-Star with Institutional Investors Research Analysts, which is, I got to tell you once again, if you're just new to the program here or joining us today right now, being an analyst and an all-star with Institutional Investor for, on their research team for 19 years, you know, that's akin to, let's say, a Cal Ripken or a Tony Gwynn. Okay, now I'm presuming you're a baseball fan, you know, or a Joe Montana, okay? Very few analysts really knock the ball out of the park like this year after year after year. And Steve has done this for 19 years, ranked as like the number one analyst on Wall Street in his sector in that technology field. And he wrote a book, which has been a bestseller on Amazon, called Full of Bull, where it really kind of opens the kimono a little bit here behind the Wall Street machine of the investment community, the analyst buy and sell recommendations, the inherent biases, and some of the misinformation that we all receive. So, Steve, we talked last segment about one practice in terms of having this natural upward bias because it's in their best interest to keep the machine going, so they have very few sell recommendations, even as they can reasonably expect times to be difficult. So, are there any other practices you'd like to identify?
Absolutely. By the way, all those accolades, they sure don't help me in my golf game, I'll tell you. yes, I think the other practice that is particularly investors really need to be aware of is the very misleading nature of the stock opinion rating systems. What is a neutral or a hold? When an investment firm goes from a buy rating to a hold, a lot of investors think, oh, okay, that's fine, I'll hold the stock. Or he's neutral, that's fine. That is a very negative a signal to sell the stock. That means the analysts and the firm are very negative, but they wouldn't dare use the big bad S word, sell word. The great example, some firms use outperform and underperform, and what does that mean? A major firm, maybe, I forget, 8 months ago, Toll Brothers, they had a outperform recommendation on it, rating, at $29, and their price target objective was 23, a decline of $6, and they had outperform. Well, when flushed out a little bit, what they were trying to indicate is, we think the stock will go down $6, all right, and you'll lose money on this, but it won't be as bad as the rest of the home building stocks. It'll outperform them. So a lot of help that is for investors to hear that. And that is so typical of the rating system. So I think the converse, of course, bottom line here is that if a rare sell recommendation moves up to a neutral, that's a seriously positive, actually, buy recommendation clothed and encoded in Wall Street terms. So I think investors need to be aware of this confusing, misleading rating systems. And there's others as well.
So what I hear you saying here, Steve, if we could just kind of crystallize it, we're hearing two things. First of all, it's a lot of these recommendations are directional in nature. When you go from a sell to a hold, that's more powerful than going from a buy to a hold. But buy to a hold is tantamount to a sell, and sell to hold is a tantamount to a buy. So it's a matter of direction in terms of their degree of commitment to the stock.
Absolutely,
that's
correct.
That's one thing. And the other thing I heard has to do with price targets. If they have a price target that's a buck higher, or dare I say, several bucks lower, it doesn't make a difference what the rating is. You don't want to be there.
The price targets are specious. I used to make them on Wall Street myself in my reports. They're pulled out of the air. If you want to really pound the table as a Wall Street firm or an analyst on a stock, you put a hugely high price objective on it to help tell your story. When you're negative first of all, no reports rarely ever give a downside, worst case, downside price target objective. And when they're negative, they rarely do it either. So, I mean, these price targets, you can't pay any attention to them.
Okay, so in the case you gave with Toll Brothers with $29 and price target at $23,
And they said outperform.
Well, obviously, that's completely inconsistent. That makes no sense unless they're outperforming the market or, as you mentioned, the group, which is going to be down 50%. So if it's only down 20%, congratulations.
And every brokerage firm on the street has a different rating system. And good luck in trying to compare and contrast. I think the other thing that maybe is related to that is that Wall Street is notoriously bad at stock picking. The analysts on the street, here's another example. Major firm, one of the big five. Countrywide, they had a buy rating on it from 40 all the way down to 9. When it was at 9 a few months ago, they went to a neutral on it at 9. Not a sell, a neutral, a hold, okay? Now it's at 5 or 6. That was very helpful.
So are you talking about the analyst consensus or one particular firm?
No, one particular brokerage firm. Major firm.
And did they have a banking relationship with this company or some other conflict of interest that would otherwise keep it afloat?
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But my point here is that the street, they've done all sorts of studies on this, and the analysts and brokerage firms are very poor at in terms of their track record on stock recommendations. And why would that be? Because that's not what analysts on Wall Street are expected or paid to do. That's not in their real job description in any major way. Their big audience, I mentioned earlier, is these institutions, these hedge funds, these mutual funds, these state pension funds, and so forth. Those big portfolio managers don't want analysts making buy and sell recommendations. And when asked or polled, what do you use Wall Street research analysts for, out of 12 things that are very useful to them, ranked 10th out of 12 is stock picking. So those major sophisticated portfolio managers know better than to use the street for stock picking. They don't want the street doing stock picking for them, and therefore it's not a skill. It's like asking a quarterback to make an open field tackle. That's not really in his job description. He's not very good at it, so don't expect him to be very good at it.
Well, you know, Steve, that leads us to another question here, because so many of us actually have delegated our individual stock picking to professionals. I'll put that in quotes. Whether it's mutual fund managers or other either hedge funds or other wealth managers in one form or another, where it's, you know, commingled accounts or what have you, institutional investors in one form or another. Are they more equipped to navigate through all the bull that's being tossed out from Wall Street?
Well, let's hope they're a little more equipped and in tune with some of this Wall Street practices that are so misleading. I'm not so sure they are totally steeped in it, really. Now, the insiders on Wall Street are those portfolio managers at the big mutual funds, but that's not – you're talking about an investment counseling, investment advisor that would handle an individual's account. They're somewhere in between, and I think they are more objective than the brokerage firm itself. So it's like going to Consumer Reports if you're buying a car rather than a car dealer. So to that degree, absolutely, I think they probably have a better track record at advising on what stocks to own and investing. So absolutely.
Okay. And once again, I heard you also say that perhaps some of the largest mutual funds, and let's say someone like a Fidelity, for example, which has more money under management than anybody else or close to it, is better equipped possibly to navigate through, or at least more aware to extract the information that they want to make the investment decisions with, as opposed to just taking everything that's being shoved out.
Yes, they are more aware of all this Wall Street practices, and therefore they know what to not listen to, what to avoid, and not get misled and so forth. Absolutely true. They're very well equipped to make their own stock recommendations, their own stock picking. However, I don't really believe in mutual funds, and my book tries to make you individuals a fisherman rather than getting fish from your broker, a rotten fish from your broker. But everyone says, well, invest in mutual funds. Mutual funds are mediocrity. Half of them go up every year and half of them go down every year. They perform pretty much like the market. And if you think you can find the mutual fund that's going to outperform for 5 or 10 years in a row, good luck. Because if they've outperformed for 2 or 3 years in a row and you put your money there, they probably are due to underperform the following year when you get in there. So I don't really believe in mutual funds. And, of course, they have a lot of hands tied behind their back themselves. They have to buy very large name stocks in very large quantities. They can't maneuver. They also are very trading-oriented, just like Wall Street. They don't invest in stocks. They trade stocks. They rent stocks. And what I try to tell the individuals is invest in stocks. Hold them for long periods. You know, be value-oriented. The mutual funds are an extension, almost an arm of the brokerage firms, and therefore have a lot of disadvantages, whereas the individuals have some advantages themselves that they can avail themselves of.
We're here again with Steve McClellan, former analyst, all-star analyst at Merrill Lynch, and also author of a phenomenal book called Full of Bull. So part of your book has to do with helping to navigate through all the bull that's being tossed our way. And the other part of the book has to do with some strategy that all of us could employ in terms of discerning where we could possibly find these value investments and these companies where we can invest in a management team that we can trust.
Yeah, I spent half the book on that. And the place I start in is I tell the individuals, invest, don't trade. Hold stocks long-term, 5 years, not short-term. You know, do the opposite to what Wall Street does. Be value-oriented, low PE multiple, value-conscious, not momentum-oriented. Be steadfast, don't react. In fact, I kind of make humor of the fact that, because I give a few talks here and there about this, and I say, the best advice I can give you most cases is do nothing. Don't react. Don't trade. And so then I really lay out a lot of what I think are pretty sound investment strategies, which are quite different than what you usually hear from most of the consensus. Things like really focus on risk and preserving capital and not losing money. It's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. And I think Wall Street, again, if you look at all the billions, tens of billions of, that they're losing with all these bad trading investments that they've been making with subprime loans and so forth, they're hardly equipped to advise investors on risk. And yet, and that's what you never see in research reports, is the downside price potential, worst-case scenarios. And so I really spend time on being conservative and preserving capital.
So how can we effectively measure that risk in terms of what downside could be? And, you know, because, you know, what do we know?
Right. Well, okay. You first of all start with the price to earnings multiple or ratio on the stocks to only pay prices for stocks that are moderate compared to high priced, high growth types of stocks. So it's the price and the relative price of stocks, but maybe the even easier method is dividends, and I really focus heavily on dividends. Dividend-paying stocks tend to, amazingly enough, outperform growth stocks. They have since 1980, last 25 or more years. Dividends have contributed 41% of the total market return in the last 80 years. If you're not owning stocks that have dividends, you're missing 41% of the return. And they also indicate conservativeness, usually on behalf of managements. They also usually indicate good cash flow, good balance sheets, established companies. And so they tend to be more conservative stocks to begin with. And that's just one indication of conservativeness. And I think, especially in this market, but every market, dividends, value, and preserving capital, and more.
So aren't there certain sectors, though, that don't lend themselves to dividends? Let's say the technology sector, the one that you covered for so many years?
Yes, absolutely. The biotech, technology, so-called growth stocks. I don't recommend those. I think you really need to know what you're doing if you're investing in high-tech stocks. Most people don't. They get enamored by the story, but they don't really understand the bowels and the depth of the what the company's doing. Same for biotech and a lot of others. So that scares me to death, and that's why I think they're extremely volatile stocks. We've seen what's happened with Google from, 750 to below 500, and that's a company still doing well, and yet the stock's done that kind of. So now I guess we're seeing it with the solar energy stocks, First Solar and so forth. They're off the charts. So, they're boom and bust, they're bubble and burst, and that to me, it's way too much risk for most individuals to be taking. So if you really want excitement in your life, that kind of excitement, go to Las Vegas, or make sure it's less than 5% of your portfolio, because I want investors to preserve their capital and not lose money.
Okay, everybody, your time's up with Steve McClellan. I invite you all to come to our website at insidewealth.net. We'll have a link to Steve, and go out and get this book, Full of Bull. You can get it on Amazon, Full of Bull, because there's plenty of it out there, especially when it's a bear market. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stu.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW 910 AM San Francisco.